KETR presents Texas Scribes, featuring literary works by authors in Northeast Texas. Welcome to a reading of A Deceit to Die For by author Luke Montgomery.
At 0100 hours, the door to Ian's apartment swung open noiselessly on freshly oiled hinges. Three masked figures, clad completely in black, slid through the door like shadows. Ian awoke with a hand over his mouth. He was secured before he was even fully awake. They left him lying on the bed, gagged and bound, hand and foot, while they searched the house. It had not been found in the search of the apartment, so the first place they looked was his briefcase. When that turned up empty, he was carried into the living room, roughly forced down into a chair, and secured with a soft cotton rope around his waist. His hands were untied, while one of the shadowy figures held him in a chokehold around the neck. In the darkness, he could sense their presence, but could not make them out. One of them walked up to the chair he was sitting in, leaned down to his ear, and whispered, "Old man, you may have no idea what we want from you. And then again, you may know very well. But right now, what you need to understand is how determined we are to get it back. What you found belongs to us. I have killed men for information not nearly as valuable, so save yourself and me the trouble of breaking you, and tell us where the document is." He thrust a notebook and pencil into his hand. Ian's mind was reeling. He took the pen and paper, but sat there motionless. "Mr. O'Brien, I cannot risk allowing you to scream, so please write down the location of the document. Once we have it, we'll leave and you can go back to bed." Ian wrote slowly and deliberately, all the while trying to place the subtle but distinct accent. He was fully awake now and desperately trying to buy time so he could figure out what was happening. He held the notebook out for the man to read. It said, "If you mean the letter I found, it's beyond your reach." The man read what Ian had written and turned as if he was walking away. Ian sensed movement. There was a blur as the shadow in front of him spun back around, and Ian doubled over in pain from a perfectly placed blow to his solar plexus. The masked man stood for a minute, looking down at the old professor, gasping for air, and then squatted in front of Ian. "You old fool," he said. "A little cooperation would have gone a long way to resolving this." Physical coercion in a crowded apartment building was out of the question. One of the men spoke in a foreign language, and moments later the chair Ian was sitting in was lifted and carried to the kitchen table. The kitchen light was turned on, and for the first time Ian had a clear view of the intruders. Three masked figures dressed in black from head to toe, all of them wearing surgical gloves. Ian felt an arm wrap around his neck and tighten into a chokehold, while another man stretched out his arm on the table. The third man pulled a loaded syringe from a small bag and removed the plastic sheath to reveal the needle. "Mr. O'Brien, I'm going to ask you one more time. Where is the document?" Ian shook his head side to side, affirming his refusal to cooperate. The threat of psychonarcotic torture was far more effective than the drug itself. The man wanted to allow time for fear to set in and have its full effect. "Mr. O'Brien," he said, "I do not understand you. You are an academician. This document is of no consequence to you or academia, but very dear to us. So dear, in fact, that I have been given explicit orders to use whatever means necessary to persuade you to talk. Once this drug is injected, you will be telling me everything I need to know, but it has unpleasant side effects." Again he paused. Ian sat motionless. The man threw a large photograph down in front of him. "This was one of my more interesting jobs," he said. When Ian refused to look down, the man thrust it in his face. Ian stared in horror at a grotesque frontal shot of a man's face with all of the skin removed from the left side. From the look in the man's eye, he had still been alive when the picture was taken. Ian shut his eyes. His stomach did flip-flops. There was silence for a moment as the intruders waited for their private terror to take effect. The man looked at his watch. "Mr. O'Brien, I'm not running out of time, but you are. What I am running out of is patience. Where is the document?" Ian did not even open his eyes. He sat there in a daze while every clue he had pieced together over the last week came into crystal clear focus. His captors waited silently for the gravity of the situation to sink in. They had seen it many times, Fear would squeeze every ounce of resistance out of him. The instinct of self-preservation would take over, and he would tell them whatever they wanted to know. Ian slowly raised his head. His eyes were bright and smiling. He said nothing. When the leader saw the look on Ian's face, he breathed a sigh, shook his head, and said, "Mr. O'Brien, we will finish this conversation elsewhere." He immediately felt the grip on his arm and the hold around his neck tighten. This was followed by the prick of a needle. The men continued to comb the house and scan his electronic media for digital copies of the document. They were rummaging through the stack of papers on his desk when Ian started having difficulty breathing and slumped over, tipping the chair to the floor. One man rushed to remove the gag while the other two lifted him back into the chair. His breathing became more and more labored. They carried him to the couch. His breath was coming in gasps now. They spoke among themselves, again in a foreign language. The panic in their voice was obvious. Ian beckoned to the man doing most of the talking. The man realized the professor was trying to speak, so he walked over to him and said, "You must be having a reaction to the drug." Ian's mouth moved, but the sound was practically inaudible. The leader knelt down and put his ear up to the professor's mouth. "You'll have to speak up. I can't make out what you're saying." The man's voice was less rough than it had been 10 minutes earlier. Ian forced the words out, teeth clenched in a Herculean effort to breathe. "Is this how George Sale died?" He paused, fighting for breath. "Death finds us all. Take care how it finds you." That was the last thing Ian was able to say. 5 minutes later, the professor was dead. The man in charge began barking orders and raining curses down on the whole lot of them. If his curses had come to pass, the whole neighborhood would have been burnt with fire from heaven, swallowed up by the earth, and erased forever.
You've been listening to Texas Scribes. Today's selection, From A Deceit to Die For, read by author Luke Montgomery. Texas Scribes features literary works by authors in Northeast Texas and can be heard each Friday morning on KETR.